From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made a surprise visit to Baghdad, Iraq, on Tuesday. There, he met with Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi and reportedly discussed the U.S.'s aggressive posture toward Iran. Iraq didn't bite, with the prime minister saying in a statement, "Iraq is building its relationships with all on the basis of putting Iraq's interests first," and that the nation would continue to work with, quote, "friends and neighbors, including neighboring Iran." The Trump administration's foreign policy in the Middle East appears to be cohering around isolating and provoking Iran. Many worry that the fears of war with Iran that have been brewing for years, especially under Republican administrations, might be realized under Trump. Juan Cole is my guest. He is the Richard P. Mitchell Collegiate Professor of History at the University of Michigan. He's written several books, including The New Arabs, How the Wired and Global Youth of the Middle East is Transforming It, and Engaging the Muslim World. He has a column at truthdig.com. His blog Informed Comment can be found at juancole.com. And you can actually watch the interview we did with him about his latest book, Muhammad, Prophet of Peace Amid the Clash of Empires, on our website, risingupwithsonali.com. Welcome back, Juan.
Thank you, Sonali.
So you have written about Pompeo's trip to Iraq on your blog. And let's talk about what it was that you can tell Pompeo intended to accomplish. The U.S. has sort of not paid much attention to Iraq lately, it seems. And so when he made this surprise trip, it seems as though what he was trying to do was get Iraq to join the U.S. to be among this coalition of nations that's isolating Iran. Is that accurate?
Sure. Well, that's one of the overarching goals of Pompeo's trip. I think more immediately, he is convinced that he has intelligence that showed an Iranian or an Iranian proxy a plan to attack U.S. troops somewhere in the Gulf region. And I think part of the reason that Pompeo went to Baghdad was to get reassurances from the Prime Minister, Adel Abdel Mahdi, that the Iraqi army would intervene to protect the some 5,000 U.S. troops that are still in that country, aiding in the mopping up operations against the remnants of ISIL.
Now, Pompeo has said, he said on Wednesday that he did not want war with Iran, but there would be a, quote, "swift and decisive U.S. response to any attack." Also, just weeks earlier, the U.S. deemed the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as an official terrorist on its official terrorist watch list, which is the first time that a state-related militia has been put on that list. So that sort of is part of the framing of the U.S.'s posture toward Iran, right?
Well, yes, the U.S. has adopted an increasingly belligerent tone towards Iran. First of all, in 2017, the Trump administration breached the nuclear agreement that the United Nations Security Council had attained with Iran. And that agreement had said Iran would mothball most of its nuclear enrichment program, some 80%, in return for sanctions relief. Trump breached the deal and increased the sanctions on Iran, making them extremely severe, even to the point of essentially a financial blockade against Iran selling its petroleum in the world. And then more recently, we've had these moves to declare the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which is essentially Iran's National Guard, in addition to its National Army, as a terrorist group, which makes no sense since terrorist groups are defined as non-state actors. Iran, in return, declared the U.S. Army a terrorist group. And of course, that kind of rhetoric is concerning, and it's not impossible that a pro-Iranian small terrorist group might target U.S. troops off of that declaration, which may have led to the current crisis.
Now, with Trump's undoing of the Iranian nuclear deal, which was, you know, arguably the pinnacle of the Obama foreign policy legacy, we see that even Europe can't, you know, is having a hard time keeping that agreement in place because of these very, very strong U.S. sanctions. Did Pompeo, as far as you know, also try to rope Iraq into sanctions on Iran?
Actually, I think it may go the other way around. In return for greater security cooperation, the Iraqi press is reporting, and these are unsourced reports, so who knows, but the Iraqi press is reporting that Pompeo dangled an extended waiver to Iraq, allowing it not to step up and completely cut off Iran, as the United States had been insisting. So Iraq seems to have been given some breathing space. The Iraqi official line is they're simply not going to join in a U.S. boycott of Iran. Iran is a close neighbor. They're both Shiite-led states. They have warm relations. And frankly, Iraq is an economic mess in the wake of the Bush misadventure there. And Iraq desperately needs Iran's trade and help. Some provinces of Iraq actually get their electricity from Iran. And so Iraq is not in a position to cut off Iran. But on the other hand, desperately does need the United States to make sure ISIL doesn't come back and threaten Baghdad for security arrangements and so forth, so that the Baghdad government is really caught in a very difficult place. So they've, I think, probably tell the Americans secretly different things than what they say publicly about Iran.
And of course, the historical framework, of course, for the relationship between Iraq and Iran is a brutal years-long war between those two nations that the U.S. helped to fuel. That was in part the reason why Saddam Hussein was propelled into power in Iraq. And it seems as though neither Iran nor Iraq have any appetite for a repeat of anything close to that war, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, there's a very good and warm relations between Baghdad and Tehran. One of the ironies of the Bush administration policy was that they did overthrow Saddam Hussein, who had been Bush Sr.'s close ally in the Iran-Iraq war. And now the Iraqi Shiites, some 60% of that country, have come to power. And while they don't hold exactly the same ideology as the Iranian Shiites, they view Iran as a sibling, as a very close and warm neighbor, and so they are completely uninterested in intentions with Iran, and indeed are seeking better economic relations, not worse. So the Trump administration dream that it can line up Iraq against Iran, and even there's been talk in the Trump administration of trying to get the relations between Baghdad and Riyadh with Saudi Arabia better. That's just a pipe dream. It's highly unlikely to happen, and it's a result of U.S. policy that the Shiites now do control Iraq.
Now, there's been a lot of evidence to suggest that the Trump's policies on Iran are driven by his hawkish national security advisor, John Bolton, who's basically had this idea that attacking Iran is a centerpiece of any important U.S. foreign policy. Is Bolton behind what you think is happening with the U.S. and Iran?
I think that there's a big split in this administration on many foreign policy issues between Trump himself and the more pro-Trump elements of his government and the old national security apparatus that people like Bolton and Pompeo are part of. And so I think Trump sees Iran as a problem somewhat like China. That is to say, here's a country, from Trump's point of view, somehow taking advantage of us. Trump lives in a fantasy world, so I'm not saying that this is true. It's how he sees things. and gotten a free ride, a much better deal from us than it deserved, and we're, our interests are being injured as a result. Let's clobber them with trade sanctions until they cry uncle. So let Iran into Syria and to expand its geopolitical reach, and supporting Hezbollah against Israel, and the nuclear deal just didn't deal with that expansion of Iran's geopolitical scope, and so Trump wants to put Iran in a box, wants to cut it down to size. But the Bolton wing of the Trump administration wants regime change. It wants to turn the screws on Iran so hard that Iran will somehow react in a rash way. And then Bolton, I think there's evidence, is hoping to use that as a pretext then for the U.S. actually to conduct an airstrike on Iranian soil. There are reports from the press that he tried to accomplish this last fall, but may have been thwarted by a then Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis. Mattis may have resigned over this entire imbroglio, and so there's no permanent Secretary of Defense to stand up to Bolton, and so we may be seeing this crisis unfold in part because Bolton has the run of the roost.
Now, Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan has just been formally nominated to that position by Trump. He's a former Boeing executive, and he faces a lot of criticism in the Senate. He may potentially face a rocky path to confirmation, but even if he does get confirmed, and even in his current position as Acting Secretary, you're suggesting that he's basically allowing Bolton and Pompeo to run the show.
Well, in Washington terms, there are principals and non-principals. There are members of the cabinet who can call a cabinet meeting, who can call for an emergency meeting. A deputy secretary of something is not a principal. Bolton, as a national security advisor, is a principal. So at the moment, the way the game is played in Washington, Bolton has all the cards.
What about the fact that Pompeo is now planning a trip to Russia? He just announced that he was also going to be traveling there to speak with Vladimir Putin on a number of issues, including Iran. In Syria, Russia and Iran are on opposite sides of that war, right?
Russia and Iran are allies in Syria.
They're on the same side of that war.
Yes, and then Trump is on the other side, or actually not so much Trump, because he has often talked about just giving Syria to Russia, but the national security apparatus is upset about Iran being in Syria, and of course the Israel lobbies are upset about it in Israel itself. So. I think Vladimir Putin doesn't care whether Iran is in Syria in the long term or not. He needs Iranian help at the moment, and therefore he's running interference for Iran in Syria. But it's an alliance of convenience. It's not ideological. It's not, it's not a friendship necessarily between Tehran and Moscow. But it's just a practical matter. Russia supplied heavy air support to the regime in Syria, the Bashar al-Assad regime in Damascus, to defeat the rebels. Air support in and of itself is useless in taking territory. You can bomb people all you like, and it doesn't necessarily matter. You look at Vietnam, where the U.S. had enormous air power superiority and still lost. So you need troops on the ground. Assad's army had largely deserted, and you needed dedicated fighters. And so Iran asked Lebanon's Hezbollah to come in on al-Assad's side. Then they sent a few troops, mainly conscripted Afghans, to help. And so they arranged for there to be a fighting force on the ground that would actually take territory in the wake of the Russian bombing. So Putin still needs that. I think there's going to be still another big campaign in Idlib. Down the road, I don't think there's any reason to believe that Russia will necessarily plump for Iran staying in Syria. But at the moment, that's the position. And he's not going to budge on that. It's a practical matter.
So what about the fact that the American public isn't paying that much attention to what the foreign policy in the Middle East is and really does not have any appetite for continued war? Of course, war is happening, even if we may not be paying attention to it. You know, we're continuing to bomb Afghanistan and Syria and support the Saudi bombing in Yemen. But it doesn't seem as though no matter how much Bolton and Pompeo will or will wish it, that the American public would really want a war with Iran.
The American public doesn't want a war with Iran, and Trump campaigned against the Middle East wars as having been ruinous. He campaigned against the Iraq war ex post facto, and so his base, the MAGA group of some one-third of our country, I think would be up in arms if Trump then turned around and tried to go to war with Iran. And Trump seems to realize this. There's been reporting this last week in the Washington Post that Trump is becoming nervous about the hawkishness of Bolton and Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, and feels like they're trying to involve him in these foreign adventures, and that he's much more of an isolationist and would like to get out of these things. But I think Trump, as I said, really just wants to strong arm Iran. He's convinced that Iran is a problem that he can solve by just economic sanctions and so forth. He doesn't want a kinetic or a military involvement there. But the difficulty is, what if Bolton is devious enough and determined enough to get up a Gulf of Tonkin type of story, so that there seems to be a pretext. And then it becomes, a matter of Trump's macho rhetoric. Is he really going to let the Iranians put one over on him? Is he going to let some small Shiite group kill a U.S. soldier, and that group is backed by Iran, and not respond in any way? So I think the problem is that Trump and the country don't want a war. But a war can be ginned up, and we've seen wars ginned up, and the Iraq war was ginned up. So I don't discount the possibility of a sharp turn on this issue. And I just would remind viewers and listeners that even though the U.S. public was against Middle East involvement and voted for Obama twice, partly on those grounds, because he was winding down those wars, when ISIL arose in 2014, opinion polling switched, and a majority of Americans said that Obama had to go in and do something, which is why Obama sent 5,000 or 6,000 troops to Iraq and resumed bombing. So the public can be volatile on security issues.
Right. And you point out in your piece that you just wrote about the Pompeo's visit to Iraq that Mike Pompeo and John Bolton are known serial dedicated liars. So certainly can't put anything past them. What about Trump's recent statements on Iran? On Thursday, he said to Iran in his sort of usual style, call me. What I'd like to see with Iran is I'd like to see them call me. And of course, Iran did not respond very positively to that, saying there will be no negotiations with America. And I don't know what exactly Trump meant by that. I suppose his foreign policy or any of his policy statements aren't really ever to be taken seriously.
Well, I think he was sincere. I think that's the way he sees the world, is that he's taken Iran down a notch. He's ruined the agreement that they got, and he's put them under severe sanctions. So now it's their turn to reach out to him and say, what kind of a deal can we make here? That's how he thinks the world operates. I presume that's how he did business in the real estate sector of New York. He doesn't understand that this is ridiculous. He thinks it's perfectly plausible that Iran will now call him. And he can't understand that by violating and breaching the U.S. agreement with Iran that was reached in 2015, he's made it impossible for the Iranians to talk with him, and also useless. So why would the Iranians spend a couple of years getting a new deal with Trump when he's already proven that the paper would be worthless and that he might just withdraw from that on a whim, too? I think it's just the way he sees the world, and we're saddled with this extremely blinkered and erratic individual at the helm, and I fear also one that's maybe manipulable by the hawks around him.
He also, by the way, said that John Kerry, this came out of the blue, John Kerry should be prosecuted for violating the Logan Act, because Kerry has been apparently communicating with Iranian officials about the undoing of the nuclear peace deal, the nuclear deal that he so, you know, that he worked so hard on and that Trump undid. Trump sort of then pulled back saying, we wouldn't do that. It's just the Democrats that do such things. I guess he'd forgotten about Benghazi. But he, you know, suggested that Kerry should be arrested or not arrested, prosecuted for violating the Logan Act. What do you make of this?
Well, the Logan Act forbids U.S. Private individuals from conducting diplomacy abroad, sort of representing themselves as doing it on behalf of the United States. Kerry's not doing that, so the Logan Act does not apply. Ironically enough, soon after Trump made that outrageous set of comments about Kerry, he sent Rudy Giuliani, who's a private lawyer, to Kiev to negotiate with them. There's a lot of hypocrisy involved here. I think what is true is that John Kerry, when he was Secretary of State, and Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif of Iran formed a bond, they did conduct these negotiations successfully to conclusion. And it's very likely that Zarif and Kerry do continue to talk behind the scenes, that Zarif wants to pick Kerry's mind about the contemporary American political scene. But Kerry is certainly not advising Iran not to negotiate with the United States. Kerry is all about negotiating, and he proved that when he got this deal.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Juan, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your latest piece in Informed Comment on your website, juancole.com, from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Juan Cole, the Richard P. Mitchell Collegiate Professor of History at the University of Michigan. He's also a columnist at truthdig.com, and his blog Informed Comment can be found at juancole.com. He's also a prolific author. I'm Sonali Kulhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.